Thank you, organizers, first of all. That's a wonderful place, Perimeter is. I'm reporting today on work done in collaboration with my longtime collaborator, Thomas Gebhardt from Vanderbilt University. And we are looking at possible generalizations of a Aharonov-Bohm effect to higher orders, and it will become clear what I mean by higher orders. So let's just review how in classical mechanics a variational principle works. Well, everybody knows you have a system, you set up an action, you find the first variation, and the Euler-Lagrange equation follows. But the subtle point is, of course, that this map is not one-to-one. So for instance, for different actions, you can have the same equation of motion. And in particular, suppose we have a given an oriented curve, and you have a one differential one form of order one, and if you were to add to the action a term which is the integral of A, remember A is the differential form, so it contains D, all the differentials already, what you would obtain as a first derivative is a first variation, the expression in terms of either Euler derivative or the following expression. And now, if you were to impose the boundary condition that variation of x on the boundary vanishes, and of course for the first variation to vanish, you would conclude that the field strengths, or dA, equals zero. So this is the differential form expression for the abelian version of, for those who are familiar with that, abelian version of field strengths. So what we found is that for some reason, well, not for some reason, we found that the closed forms, the closed means that differential of it equals zero, plays significant role in addition when one would attempt to add terms to the action which would not change the equation of motion. That's the crucial point. I'm going to be adding terms to the action that do not change the equation of motion, and I will call them topological for the reasons that I will explain. So another class of forms known is the exact form. This is when A is just a derivative, just a differential. For instance, pure gauge transformation is of this kind. And of course, you see that one is a subset of the other, but not the other way around. Not every closed form is exact. And what we will be interested in is the closed one forms which are not exact. So, and I will make an analogy with geometry just in a second. So a very simple picture is if you have a contour, and if you slightly deform it from C to C prime, and if the region of deformation, the field strength vanishes, then there is no contribution to the term of the action. So the action suffers no difference, and you can do these perturbations quite freely. And in this way, this action is a topological quantity because it has global properties. Now, what we will do next, we will construct various sets of differential forms, and we will start this A star, A superscript star, would be the set of all forms of order one that are exact. In other words, dA equals zero. So in other words, for classical physics, there is no interest here because there is nothing happening. But my argument is, our argument rather, is that for quantum mechanics, that's essential ingredient. And I will show how Aharonov-Bohm effect actually follows from this setup in the simplest possible setting. So it turns out that we can generate these, so the spaces would be a linear, it would be a union of those various degrees P, which I will define, and we'll recursively, iteratively generate the whole set, ground to up, from ground up. And for instance, the first one, A1, would be generated by so-called cohomology group, which is the group of all closed forms which are not exact. And the associated quantity with this cohomology group would be a homology group, which would be more of topological nature, probably it's the next slide. And the crucial point is if we have only simply connected spaces, then there is nothing interesting going to happen. And as you all will know, Aharonov-Bohm effect happens in the case when you have non-simply connected space. So that would be evident here. It turns out that all elements of AP non-local quantities and A1 non-local quantities as well, and the degree of the non-locality increases with increase of P. So what I'm saying, basically, we're going to construct a hierarchy of differential forms that can enter the variational principle in quantum mechanics. So, right, and only one thing to mention in addition to this is that the curves would also fit naturally into different sets of possible curves, and these are known to be contained within the fundamental group or the homotopy group pi 1 of M. M is the manifold on which we work and will be restricted exclusively to three-dimensional manifolds. And the point is that the value of this topological term is the same within a certain set of those curves, and that set would be an equivalence class of the curves within this fundamental group. I will give an example, give examples, and it will become clear. Now, what is important, though, is to keep in mind that quantum mechanics would put a huge restriction on kind of elements of the group that this path can take, can belong to. And specifically, when you multiply a path, what you do, you send electron along one path and then start from the end point, that's the beginning of the next path, et cetera. So you multiply them by composition. You just put back to back them. And in this way, the elements of the action, the resulting action, should be within an abelian representation of that group. And in general, they are not. So we will have to be very carefully selecting the abelian subgroups out of so-called free groups, as you will see. So, right. The bottom line of basically the result that I'm going to derive is that the action of order 1 is responsible for the standard Aharon-Obaum effect, and we argue that higher order terms could lead to measurable effects. But we do not know. This is a theory, and we would really like somebody to do an experiment. So let's start with the setting up the space. Our space would be as follows. First of all, we define the bunch of disjoint tubes, which are direct products of a center line, a center curve C, closed curve C sub I, and a disk D sub I. Here is the example of a disjoint of one tube, and then we have a bunch of them, so they have no intersection points. They can link. They can tie themselves together. There are all possibilities. And the space that we're going to work on is the following. First, take a union of these tubes. They are disjoint, as I said, so intersection of them is empty set. Take a union and subtract everything from R3. So we are in a complement of the R3 space minus those tubes. And the physical picture here is that essentially the magnetic flux would be filling those tubes, and we want to stay out of the tubes. But the crucial point is we have more than one tube. In general, we'll have n tubes, and I will show how complicated a variety of terms that you can create is. So, right, as I was saying before, homology and cohomology groups go hand in hand, and they basically capture important topological properties of the space, and I'm sure people know that they do not capture all of them, but it will be sufficient for our purposes. So, as I said, the cohomology group with a superscript H1 is a group of all closed forms which are not exact. And similarly, if you have homology groups, these are closed curves which are not boundaries of some regions. So you take a curve and you just subtract possible moduli. You take a equivalence class, you subtract possible boundaries, and you will arrive at elements of the homology group. So the homology group has a basis, so these partial D's, means a boundary of a region. So for instance, on the picture here is the boundary. So this would be one generator of the group, of the homology group. And we can take anything which is can be smoothly deformable into it. So we have N tubes, we have N disks, we have N boundaries. So we have a basis of a homology group is those N circles. And then we have one forms, gauge potentials, and we have n of them. These are bases of cohomology group. And there is a famous theorem in I guess algebraic geometry called the RAM theorem, which says you can always choose them in such a way that they are dual to each other. The meaning of that is if you take an integral of the aj potential over the boundary of the disk with a different index I, you will obtain nothing, and if they match, this would be that. So if we go back to the picture, basically if I take the circulation or vector potential of AI around this disk, I get one, but if there is another tube somewhere here called J, and if there is a potential coming from here and I circulate this, I get zero, and so on. So for all pairs of I and J. Now, the very crucial point in our derivation would be to solve this so-called duality condition for the gauge potential. And of course, it's well known in electromagnetism, for instance, or in Yank-Mills theories, that this is impossible to do because this is equivalent to the gauge choice. And one is free to choose any gauge they want as long as it satisfies that integrability condition, integral condition. And here is our choice. I'll show you the picture next slide. The choice, it's called singular gauge. And this singular gauge is quite remarkable in a way, and actually Akir used it in one of his lectures recently, without maybe calling so, but it was exactly that. So what you are having here, this is the one form that depends on three coordinates in space x. You integrate over two-dimensional surface sigma I with a delta function, and then you have, there's a Hodge star, there is a wedge product of differential forms in this. The basic counting is the following. These are one forms, Hodge makes it two form, and another one gives you three, but because you integrate delta function, which is two-dimensional, the result is one-dimensional. So sigma I is the surface such that the boundary of it is our curve, C sub I. So here's a picture. Here is a contour C sub I. Remember, our tube is along the CI. It has certain diameter around it. So the sigma is the yellow region. It's one possibility. Of course, this is like a soap bubble. I can move that surface yellow as much as I wish, as long as the boundary stays on CI and as long as it doesn't intersect itself. So this is the boundary, and this is the gauge. And if you were to integrate the potential J along this curve C, what the integral does, it will count how many times you cross the singular surface. That's all. That's just a counting device. And you cross in a positive direction, you get a plus one, negative, you get minus one, and then if you do it twice, you pick up number two. So all these integrals are integers, and the point where things intersection happens is here. Now, if you say you can defeat this and say, well, how about if I deform my soap bubble so much that my curve would have to cut through the surface more than once? Well, remember, there is orientation. So sometimes it will be plus, sometimes it will be minus, but total will be exactly the same. It's invariant. It's a well-known result. So now, once we define these differential forms A1, we're going to form a basis. We're going to form a span of them, or in other words, we look at the vector space, which has the basis, these forms, and this is our vector space A1, A superscript 1. So for a given closed curve C, we have a uniquely defined vector space of the first order topological actions, S1. And I will show that the AB effect is actually follows directly from here, but it should be obvious by now. But non-trivial part starts now. So everything up till now is known. This is a new thing. So suppose we have two contours, I and J, and suppose they are different. So what I'm going to do, and I'm not saying if they are linked or not linked, suppose they are unlinked. But this works also for linked ones, but then I would have to unlink them later on. I will tell you when. So suppose you have two, and what you're going to do is the following. You take one form, AI, and wedge product with another one form, or if you want to think in terms of cross products, that's a cross product, and you have a second rank tensor here. So you create a quantity Fij, and I chosen the letter F because I would like this to call field strengths, but doesn't matter how you call it. Now, important point is, if I were to take an exterior derivative D of it, well, there is a known rule, and this is minus is not a mistake. If you look for the value of this quantity outside of tubes I and J in the manifold M. Remember, we took the whole space and we subtracted all the tubes, because the flux is in the tubes. Then you'll obtain that the dF is zero. because field strength doesn't go outside of the solenoids. It's inside the field strengths F, Fi and Fj. So we have that the form is closed, and by a known result in differential geometry, we can find a local expression for F itself in the form of gauge potential Aij. A is still a one form, but two indices indicate that this is the second order fields, as everything we are doing here, second order. So F has two indices, A has two indices. This is possible only to do locally. So now, turns out that if these two contours are unlinked, basically what I'm saying here is, if you have, here is my contour C, I, and here is my contour C, J, I can choose, this is my sigma I, this is my sigma J. I can choose these sigma I and sigma J's in such a way that they are disjoint. They have no intersection points. Of course, I could extend the soap bubble here and wrap it inside that, but it will create, but you can calculate the same thing, and the result will be exactly the same. But the point being that if you calculate what is DAIJ is, this is essentially F, and the value in the case of unlinked value of Fij would be zero. Now we can solve for Aij with two indices, Aij, second order gauge field. We can solve in terms of the following non-local quantity, non-local expression. We have the first order gauge potentials, those that we know from electromagnetism, Ai and Aj, but we also have phases, gamma I and gamma j. So gamma I is some number constant plus the contour. So if I were in this position, I would choose a point x naught. I would create my contour that can go through in, through go here, and maybe end at a point x. And this is my contour gamma, which is little gamma is the phase associated with it, and I will assign initial point, initial value of the phase delta I to it. So this is the non-local quantity. It depends on the choice of the contour gamma. But we take now a linear span of those, and we calculate the second order gauge fields, and we calculate the second order action by enumerating, going through all I and J's. So third order. We go with I not the same as J, not the same as K, which, by the way, doesn't mean that I should not be equal to K. It could be. So we have three curves now, or three through solenoids, and we construct the following object with a plus. There is a 2 here, I, J, K. They're always in the same order, and there is a 2 there, and little algebra shows you that this form is closed. Therefore, and in fact, this is a unique up to a modular, up to a constant factor. Once you calculate, you will find that you could solve in a similar way as we did before. You could solve for little a triple, the third order a, and the solution is identical with the previous one, except that along the contour capital gamma, you have to integrate the second order fields. Remember, all fields a are one form, so this is a legal expression. Right, and then you proceed to calculate the topological action of order 3. And then you just proceed to higher orders. There is no mystery there, and in fact, this thing is quite known in algebraic topology. Now, the restriction that happens here is the following. Everything I was defining so far is outside of the tubes. But what if I would like to define those A with two indices, A with three indices, inside the tube? So here was my tubes. This was DI, this, and this whole thing was a tube, TI. What if I would like to define somewhere here to define AIJ, given that J is there? Turns out if you do that, the requirement that you're going to obtain is something like this, that the integral over the boundary of this tube of this form Fij should be zero, and there is a similar expression when this is J and this is Ij. And once you calculate, remarkably what you find is the restriction, R stands for restriction, is that the following integral should all vanish, which is the integral of a gauge potential created by the J-tube over the center line of the I-tube for I not equal to J. They all should be equal to zero. Topologically, what this means, it's very simple. It means that all pairs of these loops are unlinked. They're all completely unlinked. But to be precise, but because I don't have much time, I would say they are unlinked to the first order. There are different degrees of linking. And then as you proceed to the second or, to the third order, you will find the restriction is of the same kind. The second rank, second order gauge fields, one forms, are integrate to zero over each contour when I and J and K are all equal, but I could be K. This is so-called second order linking between the triple of two curves, and I don't have time to describe why, how this AJK could be split into the integral over CJ and CK. So you proceed to higher orders, and what is interesting here is that if you try to look at this picture from afar, you would see that the most trivial configuration is the richest in topological features. What I mean, the simplest one is the one when there is no linking at all. If you do not have any linkings between those n participating tubes, then the definition of a topological terms is the most, you have the most freedom. You have the least number of restrictions. So what this basically boils down to is you're going to look at the free product of various groups, and I don't have time to remind what the free product of groups are. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at, we're actually going to do calculations. Okay, how about that? So what we're going to do now is the following. So suppose you have these little a sub i's, they're just like these little circles. Here's my a sub I, and here's my a sub j, for instance. These are oriented. These are oriented contours. And what I'm going to do is to create some very complicated path out of them. That will be crucial for the experiment that I'm going to suggest in the end. So this path is now going to be combined in the following product. It turns out it's a general theorem that you can show that the arbitrary element of a homotopy group element for the capital N links has the following form. So it's a1 to the power n. What it means here is, well, this was a1 to the 1, aj to the 1, and here is the aj to the 2, I guess. Aj squared, etc. How many times you link with this loop, or how many times you cross the surface sigma j, and so on. So these are arbitrary integers, and this is as general as it can be. Once you do that, let's calculate the actions, the first order, second order, third order, etc. So remember I said it depends on these deltas. These deltas are the values, some unknown constants prescribed to a given point x naught, and there is a deltas with two indices as well somewhere there, maybe here. These are not Kronecker's deltas. And there are n's. N's are these integers, and there are sigmas with two indices, sigmas with two indices, and sigmas with three indices are something like this. And you can write for higher orders as well, just one or minus one, depending on the relation between indices. The point being that if you were to put two paths back to back, and if you were to look at this action, it will not be additive for multiplicative paths. In order to make them multiplicative, you have to restrict everything to a abelian subgroup. And there is an interesting calculation showing how these deltas should be determined to be zero the actions, these actions Sj and Si should be zero in order for the second order action not to depend on deltas. You cannot set deltas to zero. And remarkably, you will be able to select only a certain number, certain kind of paths which are allowed. They are called commutator loops in geometry, and this is basically something like this. G1, well, this should be A1, that's the same. A1, A2, A1 minus 1, A minus 2. What it means is you first go, let's say AI, where's my AI? You start at this point, let's say this point. You link with AI in a positive way. Then you link with AJ as a positive way. Then you link with AI in a negative way. And then you link with this one in a negative way, and you come back. I'm going to show the picture, which shows that. So where's the picture? Picture would be, let me show the picture. Right, the picture would be this. This is the picture. You go, this is my C1, this is my A1. So I go A1, link, then I go A2 this way, then I go A-1, this is the opposite of this, and then I go A2-1 in this way, and return to the point. And if you knew something about so-called Borromean rings, what you would see is that this is topologically equivalent to the configuration of three links, which are not pairwise linked, and yet they are linked in a triple. So this is a famous thing, and right. So then, what I'm gonna say is that if you calculate the action and make it abelian by choosing these so-called commutator subgroups, they're called lower sequence groups, something like that, and you would be able to see that they are allowed to be added to the action and what they will translate into the phases. So this is my final punchline approaching, that once you add terms like this, you're going to obtain phases. AB phase would be something coming from S1, action, the first order. S2 will bring new ones. So let me give you exactly example what will happen in the, so P equal 1 is the Aronoff bound phase. So Xi is some dimensionful quantity, something like this, we ignore that. And N is a linking number with the curve, and phi sub I is a flux you have. Second order Aronoff bound effect, I claim, should be of the following kind. There's a constant K2, Xi squared dimensional analysis. Then there is a product of these ends, and there is a product of fluxes. So what we propose is for somebody to do the experiment, which would see this second order flux. Let me show you the experimental picture that would probably, yeah, here it is. So here is one solenoid, blue, and solenoid green, and we're going to send an electron split into two parts, and the calculations that I had to skip because there's so much material is basically, the crucial point is, in order to see the second order phase, you have to have no first order phase. And we think, we cannot claim, this might be the reason why people didn't see this kind of phase before, because they were focusing on seeing the first order phase, but the requirement for the existence of second order phase is necessarily there's no first order. And the reason why there is no first order, because you see the red line, for instance, encloses the blue solenoid, and so does it encloses the blue the green solenoid. And the plate that I mean here, maybe there is some dielectric plane that would, you know, restrict the influence of this path to that path. So if somebody would do it, that would be great. And the result should be of the kind that the phase should be proportional to the product of two fluxes. It should have a constant K2. Yes, K2 could be zero. Well, that could be. But if we are correct, and we can actually derive, maybe it was on the previous couple previous slides, that there is a generalized Dirac condition showing how you can find the value K2 and actually all K sub P's for the, so where is that expression? There is an expression for K sub P being over here, 2P minus P plus 1. So P equal 1, this is 1. Because I'm out of time, right?
One minute
just for the summary and conclusions. So we show that although classical mechanics allow addition of terms of topological nature to its action, which doesn't do any harm or any good to the equational motion or anything, in classical mechanics, quantum mechanics is quite different situations. And because of all these terms can be uniquely classified by their topological properties, we have a whole tower of topological terms and corresponding topological phases of higher orders than Aronoff bound. And basically, my punchline again, can someone please do this Borromean ring experiment? Maybe Yutaka would like to do something. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. We have a minute or two for questions. So can you envision what would be an interference effect when you have two links?
Linked?
Yeah.
No, it cannot. Huh? So if you have two links,
and I send an electron beam, and somehow
no, this would not work because I didn't have time to explain that second order fields require a condition for their definition. They are not well defined if there is a linking between the two. The two have to be unlinked, just like you have with two solenoids here. The two solenoids, blue and green, are unlinked. They're inside of each other.
Yeah.
You see, if they were like this, as you say. There is no way to define this phase. There are topological obstructions. It's just non-definable. It's a crucial point, and that's what I said, that perhaps people miss this kind of thing experimentally because they're focusing on your phase. They wanted to see that one. And in the circumstance which you describe, I assume the answer would be, no matter how you send it, you will just add things up. You know, I'm linking with the first, with the second, then maybe unlinking with the first, with the second. But this configuration of the Borromean wind configuration, there's a calculation. You see, I'm linking with one, then linking with the second one, but now I'm unlinking with the first one. I'm undoing the thing. So I'm doing this thing, which I was saying, A1, A2, A1 minus one, A2 minus one. And because things do not commute, this is not equal to one. Sorry, this is not equal to A minus 1 minus 1 A2. Because if it were, then I would get identity. It's not. But they have to be unlinked. And this is the part of the expression I used, that the simplest configuration is the richest from the topological point of view. The simplest, in a way, there is no linking. Once you have n circles like this, you can define the second order phase, third order phase, all the way to the n's.
So we have two unlinked ones. What will happen if I do interference effect?
You have two solenoids?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
I'm going to do this. Here is my two solenoids, C1 and C2.
Yeah.
I'm going to send an electron on this crazy trajectory, the red one. Now, of course, you have to think about that this is a little bit split, so you don't arrive at the same point as you. Or you can send on the upper trajectory, if you like. Or if you are really into something, you can go this all topological equivalent. You send, you see, again, if you go on C3, I'm going above C2, then below C1, but then above C2. So all pairwise are unlinked, as you can see, but you cannot take them apart. You have to have two solenoids which are not linked and send on this particular trajectory. This can still fail, I'm not claiming, it can still fail if the K2 is zero, K2 is zero coefficient. We have argument why it's 1 over 2 pi, but we cannot prove. But the crucial signature of this experimental result, I mean, for experimentalists, would be it's proportional to the product of fluxes.
Right.
That's crucial. It's not linear, it's quadratic in fluxes.
This is
an
intuitive explanation.
Why it is so? Well, because the flux in a product comes from going around the first one and the second one. Then there are linear terms. So it's basically a quadratic form, second order in phi 1 and phi 2. But linear terms drop because I do linking and unlinking. So only diagonal terms remain, phi 1 times phi 2. And there is nothing else. Well, I call it diagonal, although there's no phi 1 squared.
Very nice. Any last minute questions? If not, let's thank Roman again.